Let's start off this morning with a moment of honesty. How many of you would admit that you have a tendency to try and avoid small, annoying, everyday tasks that need to be done? Right? All of us. Truthfully, you can put your response in the chat if you would. Most of us suffer from a chronic condition called task avoidance. It's really a silly thing to live with when the cure only takes a few moments, or maybe a little bit longer, but if we just step right into it, it actually can get out of the way. I can remember my roommate before I was married. He had this eccentric quality to himself. The sink was always filled with dishes. And truthfully, my roommate, he would only wash the dishes when there weren't any other dishes left in the cupboard. His rationale was because he was trying to save water and effort and energy in the time. It was a little frustrating. And for those of us that aren't eccentric and that actually want to have a clean glass available to us when we go to the cupboard, it was one of those things that stretched our relationship. But we got along. I just learned that I needed to do the dishes. Now, the truth is, I think when we find ourselves avoiding tasks like doing the dishes, and that's just one silly example of the way we're wired, we all find ourselves avoiding tasks like this from time to time. And for some of us, this makes the idea, the missional practice that we're going to talk about today a bit challenging. But if we take hold of the challenge and we lean into it, I really do believe that we could change the world. Now, we're in this series called Bless, How to Bless Your Neighbor, which is all about our mission of loving God and loving others without limits. This is not just ours as a church called Linden Road. It's actually your mission as a member of Linden Road. It's my mission, and it's our mission together. As we've said, too often we settle for hoping people will find out how to love God and love others instead of helping them do that and helping them love God and love others without limits. During this series, the whole point is to equip and to challenge one another to be people who actually help. Through the years, we've found that the best way to help, the best way to live out this mission, is to be a blessing. And so we've been challenging one another to identify the people and the places we've been called to bless. Around here, BLESS is actually an acronym. We've looked at that, right, the last couple weeks. It basically lays out the five missional practices that we believe is central to living out Jesus' mission. We've given you this BLESS card, and I hope everyone's had a chance to either download it or pick it up if you've been in the building, where we've asked you to write down the name or the places that God has called you to bless. And if you haven't done that yet, you can actually download it right now. It's in the notes section. There's a link, and you can save it to your desktop or your phone. So far, we've talked about beginning with prayer, listening, and eating with the people we've been called to bless. And today, we're going to talk about this fourth practice, this idea of serve. Now, I know serving is a core value, I think, here at Linden Road. I love just how the opportunities, even in the past 14, 15 months, we've had to get creative, but how we've been able to bless our community and neighbors with all sorts of things. Linden Road has always seen itself as being a small church with a big heart. And even in this season of COVID, it's been amazing to see just the generosity that you've extended through this platform and as we've been back in the building to bless our neighbors through the Pots and Pans ministry, to bless our neighbors through the Easter drive-through, through the number of times that we've served together at St. Luke's. And I want to bring out a conversation I had with our young people after we finished up our last serving time. Just hear their hearts on why they do this.
Here's the master chef, at least half of the team. Lynn's in recovery mode, and we're sitting here. So we just finished up serving another meal. So tell me why you guys like to do this.
Kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Fun? It's work.
It is fun.
Work is fun when you're
able to
people.
Serve the community.
Got it.
Those who are less fortunate.
Got it. That's very good. Your mom said that you were all excited when you found out we were coming here. Mm-hmm. So why the excitement?
Because when you work, it's like you have a job or something.
That makes sense.
Another opportunity to serve the community.
Got it.
I like all the teamwork, how we like pass the bags, put the stuff in. I think that's also really fun.
Really fun. Like how fun? How much fun?
A lot.
Super. From a scale 1 to 10, 53.5.
Wow. So wow. Why should someone give up their Saturday afternoon? Because you all been here since
11 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, since 11 o'clock. So why should anybody give up their Saturday to do this?
Because there are those who are less fortunate than you are, who are having more trouble to feed themselves and their families.
Okay, if you were doing a 60-second commercial on the radio, what would it sound like?
Come and help us next time.
And then it's even fun to hear what Mom has to say.
I think the reason the kids like to come is they like the assembly line, having a job that's really important, and hanging out with everyone at church and just chilling and having a fun time.
And maybe getting some good food after it's all said and done.
And yeah, there's extra pie left over, you know.
By our serving, by our creating these opportunities to serve within the community, yeah, it takes away time, but I think the benefit to us individually is a game changer. We're encouraged by just the good words that our students shared. And I've seen this over the many years as being the pastor here with the opportunities that we've created within the community and how especially our young people raking leaves and delivering flowers last year at Mother's Day or poinsettias last year at Christmas. Or after going to student leadership a number of years ago, we came back and spent a couple days down at Pleasant Hill Outdoor Center painting and just doing some work around the camp. All sorts of opportunities that we've engaged in. Knowing the impact that serving's had on me, and I, to be honest, the older I get, the more I'm willing to lean in to opportunities of serving my neighbors and those in need. I think that where the church is going, not just Linden Road, but even the larger church in our community and culture, is moving outside of our buildings and moving into the communities to serve our neighbors well. And yet, I think to get there, as we talk about this, there has to be a major shift in our thinking when it comes to serving others. And here's what I'm talking about. By 1900, the field of physics had taken incredible strides forward. In fact, the science had made so much progress that there was a growing group of physicists that thought that they had nearly exhausted its limit as a discipline. One of the physicists, Lord Kelvin, was a keynote speaker at the annual assembly of an organization called the British Association for the Advancement of Science. I'm guessing this event was probably absolutely stuffy, as it sounds. Lord Kelvin took the podium, surrounded by a group of people who were convinced of their own brilliance, and he made a statement that is now infamous. He said, quote, "There is nothing new to be discovered in physics now." He said, quote, "There is nothing new to be discovered in physics now. All that remains is more and more precise measurement." Close the book, ladies and gentlemen. That's Lord Kelvin dropping the mic as he walks off stage. But here's why this statement is so infamous. 5 years later, this guy bursts onto the scene. Do you recognize him? Something about this picture tells me that Albert Einstein wasn't on the A list to be invited to this British tea party of sorts for science. He published a paper entitled "The Special Relativity" that turned everything that physicists were sure of on its head. Einstein's work literally changed the way we understand our world. Now, for 200 years, the science of physics was going in a particular direction. And after Einstein's paper, everyone had to turn around and walk in the opposite direction. It's what we call a paradigm shift. And a simple definition is it's a fundamental change in approach or underlying assumptions. As revolutionary as Einstein's research was, today we're going to look at another paradigm shift that is even more astounding. It's a paradigm shift that is going to reframe an even older misconception, a misconception that has been plaguing humanity since the Garden of Eden. Today we're going to see Jesus take the idea that the higher you rise, the more power you have, the more wealth you accumulate, means the more leverage you have to get us to serve you. And Jesus is going to take that idea and he's going to turn it upside down. Jesus is going to take that paradigm, a paradigm that most people in our world, I think, still think is true, and he's going to flip it upside down. He's going to paint a picture of what it really looks like to bless the world. And it involves a paradigm shift from a crown to an apron. And we're going to look here in John chapter 13. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and he wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Let's try to understand the magnitude of this scene. Jesus is the exalted one. He is the maker. He is the sustainer of everything. He is the King of Kings, and he's the Lord of Lords. There is no one higher. There is no one with has more power. All the wealth of the earth belongs to him. He actually created it. And Jesus knows his position. He knows that the Father has put all these things under his power. He knows his limitless authority and divine privilege. And yet, what does he do? He sets aside his crown for an apron. Now, try to grasp how that was in that moment. How shocking that scene must have been. The one who sits in the highest position stoops down to do the serving. And understand, this isn't just Jesus doing a kind deed to appear charitable. No, he assumes the absolute lowest rung on the ladder. Washing feet was a must before sharing a common meal in the ancient world. It was only a job for the lowest ranking person of the house. Think about it. This was a gross job, right? I don't know if you've noticed this before, and I'm glad to point it out. Feet are nasty. And first century feet were even nastier. Just imagine, no nail clippers, no pedicures, no socks, no shoes. You get the point. It's absolutely disgusting. For this meal, the disciples would recline at a table and sit on the floor. All those nasty feet right there in your face. And then come mealtime, those toes would be sparkling because somebody would wash them. And yet, imagine the awkward silence in this room as the disciples realize that there's no one there to wash their feet. I'm pretty sure if I had been there, I would have put all my task avoidance skills to work on this one. I would have pretended not to notice the dirty feet. I would have actually really, really tried, maybe even feigned a slight injury, right? A back problem or a sprained wrist, maybe. Or even a headache. It always works, right? I certainly would have avoided eye contact for sure with Jesus, lest he signal me to wash them. I can see it now, right? Who, me? You're talking to me? All right. But then the awkward dial gets turned up to 11 as Jesus, their leader, their rabbi, their teacher, their Lord, he takes his shirt off, he ties an apron around his waist, and he starts washing their feet. It wasn't just the grossness of the task that left them stunned. It was also the shame. Keep in mind, this was an honor and shame culture. Protecting your name, your reputation, your dignity was of critical importance. Your honor was kind of like your social credit rating, if you will. The higher your honor score, the more privilege and prestige you enjoyed. If you had a high honor score, other people were expected to serve you. Washing feet was a great way to tank your social credit rating to zero. It's why Simon Peter responds to Jesus this way. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you will never wash my feet." Now think of someone in power, someone well beyond you in wealth and status and fame. Now imagine them coming to your house for dinner. You might be a little stressed about having them in your home, but also probably honored, right? But then imagine after the meal that this person, this honored guest, Quietly gets up and goes to your bathroom and starts scrubbing your toilet. Would that make you a little uncomfortable? Probably. And I'm guessing that's probably how Peter felt, just 100 times worse. So how does Jesus respond to Peter's refusal? Look here. Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." And then Simon Peter replied, "Not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have a bath need only to wash their feet. The whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." Peter didn't realize what Jesus was doing, but because we know the rest of the story, we do. Because we know in just a few hours, Jesus will be stripped and be humiliated, but this time it will be through the violent force of others. The crown, his crown, will again be set aside, but not for an apron. This time it's for a cross. He will take on the full weight of our shame and wash us once and for all with his grace so that we can be eternally clean, restored into a right relationship with God. But for now, Jesus washes feet. And here is what I want to drive home for us today. What Jesus did in that upper room on that night before his crucifixion, it wasn't just a kind gesture. It was actually meant to catalyze a seismic paradigm shift. Because, let's look, the story continues. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." The message here is simple. Now it's our turn to serve the way we have been served by Jesus. It's our turn to set aside our crown for an apron. In a world that believes the higher you rise, the more power you have, the more wealth you accumulate, the more leverage you have to get others to serve you, Jesus says, "Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So here's the challenge. If you and I are going to carry out this mission that Jesus has set us out on, if we're going to move beyond just hoping that people are going to love God and love others, but actually helping them to love God and love others without limits, then we're going to have to live out this blessed practice. I want you to think about the people and the places God has called you to bless. Because here's what I think we've found to be true, right? When I begin with prayer, asking God to lead me to the people and places he's called me to bless, and then I start intentionally listening to people's dreams, to their needs, to their hopes, and to their fears. And then if I take the time to get to know people by having a meal together with them, once I've done those things, then I can start to see ways that I can serve them, ways that God can use me to help meet practical and emotional, relational, or even spiritual needs of the people he's called me to bless. And here's the thing, serving the people doesn't mean that you set aside time on your calendar to serve, like, okay, Tuesday at 3:30 p.m., I'm going to find some way to serve the people in my life. I mean, sure, making a commitment to serve at a particular time and place can be a great thing. However, if we're going to live out the blessed practice, what we're talking about here is more of an as-you-go kind of thing. It's a mindset. It's a posture. It's about always being ready, that doesn't seek to avoid the opportunity, but rather, in every opportunity that you live into each day, you stand ready to grab that option. You stand ready to grab an apron of sorts. You see, it's Jesus seeing a need and stepping forward to meet it. Again, think about the people and the places you've been called to bless and ask yourself, as you put their names on this card, when I'm with that person or in that place, am I wearing a crown or an apron? If the person is your spouse, your roommate, a close friend, a student, Are you wearing a crown or an apron? If the person is a neighbor or a teacher or a coworker or a fellow student, are you wearing a crown or an apron? If the place is your office or your school or the Y, are you wearing a crown or an apron? We are to be people of the apron, ready to serve. That's what it means to follow Jesus' example. I want to challenge all of us this week as we encounter the people and we enter the places God is calling us to bless. Let's lay down our crowns and let's put on an apron. Let's ask God to give us opportunities this week to serve the people in places He's calling us to bless. Let's move beyond hoping people will love God and love others without limits to actually helping people love God, love others without limits. Jesus set aside His crown and put on an apron. Do you know what motivated Him to do that? It was right there at the beginning of the scripture we read earlier. It's easy to miss. Let's look at it again. Jesus knew the hour had come for Him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved His own who were in the world, He loved them to the end. The man, Jesus, who had hours left to live, what did He do? He loved to the end. Setting aside His crown, He put on an apron. It was love that moved Him. It was love that moved Jesus to stoop down before His disciples. It was the love of Jesus that frames this entire story. This is the love that's been changing the world for the last 2,000 years. And the most vivid picture of this love that we can paint with our lives is to serve like Jesus served. May you and I, the recipients of this lavish love, follow His example. May we learn to value the things Jesus values. May we learn to see through His paradigm, a people seeking not to be served, but to serve. May we lay down our crowns and take up an apron. If we do, I really believe we could change the world. So let's pray.